court proceed to the fifth case, United States v. Salahuddin. Mr. Wilmot?
Good morning. After Mr. Salahuddin's aborted change of plea hearing, at his second change of plea hearing, Judge Clavert, speaking to him, said the following: you can't come back later and say, Judge, I have changed my mind once again. I often talk about people having to leap tall buildings in a single bound in order to withdraw a guilty plea in this courtroom. And I use that somewhat absurd example from the old Superman days to illustrate the point that it is not easy to withdraw a guilty plea in this courtroom. The court concluded that guilty pleas may only be withdrawn in the interests of justice. About a month later, after hearing explicitly from new counsel that prior counsel was ineffective, Judge Clavert indicated that the appellant had leaped the tall building. As a matter of equity and propriety, in the background of the case spread on the record, the defendant would be permitted to withdraw his plea. The court said the record showed, number one, the government told the defense counsel in writing, prior defense counsel, that the appellant is not an armed career criminal. The government told the appellant directly in a courthouse hallway conversation that you are not an armed career criminal. The plea was then entered after the first aborted change of plea hearing. And then the government says on the eve of trial, strike that, on the eve of sentencing, well, we're all mistaken. We were all mistaken. You are, in fact, an armed career criminal. But you cannot withdraw your plea because of the standard language found in the plea agreement.
But didn't the plea agreement say, you're probably going to say this is boilerplate, but would have the plea agreement and the plea colloquy would have warned him that ultimately sentencing is for the court to determine. That's the whole point of a period of time between taking a plea and then a somewhat later sentencing hearing so that the probation office can look into those things. Now, I recognize that all of these things had happened, and of course the court does let him withdraw the plea, so he gets his trial. And your real complaint is that when he gets the trial finally, it's too late to file the suppression motion. But the judge says, you should have filed that way before, long, long before.
Right. But the history of the case and Judge Clavert finding there being unusual circumstances in allowing the withdrawal of the plea, despite the fact that indeed the plea agreement says explicitly you shall not be permitted to withdraw your plea if it's later determined you're an armed career criminal, and the court makes the ultimate determination at sentencing regardless of what anyone else in the world has told you. Despite those circumstances, Judge Clavert allows this defendant to withdraw his plea. It is those extremely unusual circumstances that I think informs the sole issue before the court.
But let me just make sure I've got the sequence here. He's arraigned June 17, 2005. As I understand it, the motion's deadline is July 7,
correct,
2005.
Right.
And then we don't begin to have this back and forth about pleading guilty until September of 2005. That's when this all begins. So it's already after the time for filing perhaps a motion to suppress.
When the defendant is prepared for the first time to enter his plea on September 2nd.
That's right. So and I think what concerned Chief Judge Randa is that, in effect, a decision had already been made. Now, if somebody someday wants to file a 2255 on this or whatever, I'm not saying anything about that. But
right,
it was possible. There was no information anybody was going to find about a suppression motion that wouldn't have been available in July of 2005. And so this back and forth goes, and he gets his trial. He gets something that our system regards as a meaningful event, but the judge is saying, I'm not going to reopen the motions calendar.
Right, absolutely. And
so why isn't the good cause standard that the judge is applying actually something that relates to real hard facts like availability of information and and the like, as opposed to just sort of this general, gee, the whole thing got messed up, so let's just start over again, which seems to be what you're asking for.
Right, and indeed, and it did get very, very messed up. But why did it get messed up? And it got messed up because it is unfathomable that defense counsel on September 2nd and 5th wasn't aware that three prior felony convictions involving different victims and at different locations did not amount to armed criminal sentence.
Well, I agree with that, but it's also seems to me, as you sit, you only have to sit in this courtroom for a short period of time to see that motions to suppress do get filed with some frequency. They're often the best strategic move a lawyer can make. And by the time we even get to this September discussion, it's a couple of months after the deadline for filing that motion has gone by.
Right, and the record is incomplete at this stage as to what went on between the first contact with this defendant and his first counsel sometime around the arraignment in mid-June 2005 till the time that he attempted to enter his plea on September 2nd.
Do we really know why Chief Judge Randa refused to accept the ruling of the magistrate judge?
Well, it's a very summary disposition of about two paragraphs in length.
And I've read it.
And the only thing, as I thought about it, that he must have been focusing on, and is quite frankly what, at least inferentially, what Justice Wood is saying, is this 8-month period. We're so long after these should have been filed in July 5.
Well, you're helping the judge now, but in other words, that's what you surmise he must have been.
Right.
But we don't know, do we?
No, we don't.
How are we supposed to review his decision if we don't know?
Well, the standard is, did Chief Judge Randa abuse his discretion in not permitting...
He's still got to use that discretion according to legal principle.
Absolutely.
How do we review somebody who doesn't tell us why he ruled the way he did?
It's difficult, and what I was trying to, or what the defense was trying to have Chief Judge Randa understand, is that primarily why this defendant wants 3 months in advance of his scheduled trial date to have constitutional issues litigated is because it's clear that there was not sufficient attention paid to his case, inferentially, Justice Wood, in any regard, particularly if defense counsel was not aware of something as fundamental to, should I make sure that this truly isn't a 46 to 57 month guideline sentence as opposed to 180 months?
Basic situation is he's allowed to go to trial, but he can't contest the legality of the search. Is that right?
Right. And what becomes really crucial in this case is during the course of trial, these motions or issues collateral to the motions raise their ugly head. For example, Chief Judge Randa is concerned now that we're not going to, he uses, relitigate these pretrial motions. Of course, they were never litigated. And so when defense says, well, may I at least ask the law enforcement officers who executed the search, who say that the residents consented to the search, may I at least ask, was the resident at least cooperative with you, trying to show that there was nothing to hide? And the proceeding stopped over government objection, saying, now we're getting into relitigating or litigating pretrial motions. And Judge Randa said, right, sustained. Pretrial motions are intended not only to protect the constitutional rights of defendants, obviously that's most important, but the orderly, we're talking about efficiency and orderly administration here. How about orderly and efficient administration of jury trials? And sure enough, during the course of this jury trial, with regard to this defendant's statements that he was unable to litigate pretrial the admissibility of, sure enough, law enforcement officers were commenting on, after indicating that Miranda rights were provided, that the defendant then was silent, did not want to answer any more questions. So we started having issues with regard to, are we now commenting on the defendant's silence? And while we were litigating that issue outside the presence of the jury during the trial, it came to bear that the Miranda form in this case, where it asks, do you consent to ask questions, answer questions of law enforcement, had a question mark attached to it, put on it. I mean, we didn't litigate that at trial. Instead,
On May 3rd of 06, when Chief Judge Randa overturned the magistrate judge's ruling, was there an argument held that day, or at any time? Will the transcript reflect an argument on the issue of sustaining or overruling Magistrate Goodstein's?
No, sir. There were written submissions by the parties.
No, I appreciate that, but I mean, there was no oral argument before the chief judge.
No. And the sum and substance, and I see my time is up. The sum and substance.
Finish your thought.
Sum and substance of the written arguments was, there wasn't good cause, said the government. There wasn't good cause under Rule 12 to hear the motions 3 months in advance of trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilmot. Mr. Gianpietro?
Thank you. May it please the Court and Counsel, my name is Gordon Gianpietro. I'm an assistant United States attorney in Milwaukee, and I represent the United States today. The first thing I think I should talk about is the proper standard of review. I confess in the government's brief there's perhaps a little bit of confusion. I refer repeatedly to abuse of discretion as the appropriate standard. But then, of course, I cite this Court's decision in Hamm, which says that the standard of review is clear error. I guess I would say that either standard is a very deferential standard in the district court. I've seen clear error usually utilized with respect to reviewing facts, so I'm not really sure why the Hamm decision talks about clear error, but I think it doesn't matter for purposes of this discussion because either deferential standard of review, I think, should result in the affirmance of the conviction. It's clear from the discussion here today that the fundamental theory of the defense is that the good cause requirement of Rule 12e was shown because his prior lawyer was ineffective. There are a number of problems with that argument from the government's perspective. Judge Wood, as you've pointed out, the litigation in the district court regarding the withdrawal of the guilty plea related to the armed career criminal issue. It did not at all deal with whether or not prior counsel was ineffective. In fact, the basis for prior counsel's withdrawal was the fact that the defendant had not been able to pay his fee. And the judge asked the defendant very specifically on the record, are you dissatisfied with your lawyer? And he said no. And so the issue about the armed career criminal problem or the confusion, as Your Honor pointed out, Judge Wood, my letter to defense counsel with the plea agreement came on August 1st, I think, of 2005. The motion deadline was July 7th of 2005. So I reject the notion that you can collapse together these two issues, that the confusion over the ACC somehow explains or justifies good cause for the failure to file timely suppression motions. On the question of the status of the record on whose fault it is or why motions weren't filed, I just want to point out to the court that in the record, in the transcript, from I think it's February 1st, it's record, the transcript is at 22, and I think it's page 31 of the transcript, Mr. Wilmoth, successor counsel, specifically said to the court, with respect to the motion to withdraw the guilty plea, I am not presenting evidence. I am not calling Mr. Deruta. I am not calling Mr. Gianpietro. I'm not calling my client. And so you have a situation here where this record does not at all support the notion that Mr. Deruta is to be blamed for the failure to file suppression motions by July 7th. And that's really the crux of the matter here, is the argument was not made before the district court that the reason these motions weren't filed was that prior counsel was ineffective for purposes of the Sixth Amendment. And so I think that argument really is waived. It was not made in the district court. It was suggested in the opening brief in this court and really driven home, I think, in the reply brief here very strongly that what good cause means in this case was Mr. Deruta was ineffective for purposes of the Sixth Amendment. I don't think that argument was preserved in the district court. It was not really set front and center in the appeal brief. And I think it would be inappropriate for this court to say, yes, in fact, prior counsel was ineffective, and that satisfies the requirement of good cause. I would also say with respect to the question of whether it was unfathomable for anyone to miss the fact that three armed robberies of three victims in three locations would not satisfy the ACC requirements. Having been the one that missed that issue, I guess I'll talk about why that was possible. At the time discovery was turned over to the defendant, what we had was a judgment in that case. This is almost a 20-year-old juvenile adjudication. We knew there were three counts. We had no idea that there were three victims at three locations. In fact, once the PSR came out, what we learned is that there were as many as four or perhaps six victims in a single-day crime spree that the defendant was involved in. And really, it was not until the PSR came out prior to sentencing, when the probation department had gone back and gotten those records, that it was clear that there were victims at separate locations. And so that was really how it was missed. It was not something that I think Mr. Deruta, frankly, the probation department missed it as well. Even in their factual recitation of that crime, they listed separate victims at separate locations, but didn't realize that that would classify him as ACC. So that is why it was missed, I think, in a nutshell. And again, Judge, to look at the chronology, Judge Wood, you're absolutely right. The confusion or the representation that I made to defense counsel in that letter, in my view, that he was not ACC, was made well after the motion deadline had passed. And so I think it's unfair to come before this court and accuse the government of somehow hiding the ball, accuse prior defense counsel of being ineffective, when specifically Mr. Wilmoth did not place Mr. Deruta on the stand to testify, did not place me on the stand to testify, not that I would have enjoyed testifying in a case that I'm prosecuting, but he had requested Judge Clavert, the prior district judge, to allow me to testify. But that was a strategic decision for reasons that are not in this record. The record was not made that it's Mr. Deruta's fault for why motions were not filed by July 7th.
What about the point that Judge Ripple raised a few minutes ago about the brevity, shall we say, of the order that Chief Judge Randa issued overturning Magistrate Judge Goodstein's decision?
Judge, part of me, and I guess in a very half-hearted or humorous way, would like to say, I guess my objection to the magistrate's decision to grant the hearing was so good the judge didn't feel he needed to write anything. And I don't mean to say that. That's a flip response. I think what the judge was getting at is the status of the record, what you argued to the magistrate judge, did not show good cause. And I don't think, if you look at the submissions, if you look at the government's brief, when we appealed from the magistrate's decision to Judge Randa, we laid out this chronology. We laid out the reason why the magistrate judge's rationale for granting the motion to file instanter was unfounded.
Now, this was some distinction you were drawing between the concept of something being in the interest of justice on the one hand and good cause on the other?
Yes, Judge. There was a very lengthy...
What distinction do you see between those two standards?
Well, I think, as this Court said in the Hamm decision, there has to be a legitimate reason for the failure to file timely motions. And I think there can be all kinds of atmospherics that would say it might be nice or equitable to allow the defendant to file these motions, but what Rule 12e says very specifically is there has to be good cause. And as the Hamm decision says, there have to be legitimate reasons why the motion wasn't filed. And I think what happened here is there's a total failure of evidence on the defense part as to explain why, what reason, no reason at all was given why the July 7th deadline was missed. And I really think that's what led to the brevity of Judge Randa's decision. You know, I've read the briefs, and this is not good cause. You have not demonstrated good cause. And I think if you go back and look at the government's objection, or I think we titled it Review of Magistrate's Decision Awarding Evidentiary Hearing, I think we're Review of Decision to Grant the Motion in Stanter, you'll see how we laid out for the judge this very argument that the issues about the ACC and the question of counsel arose well after the deadline. And therefore, Judge, this is not good cause. This doesn't go to the heart of the question under Rule 12e, which is what reason was given for not filing the motions timely?
Mr. Giampetris, just so I understand the sequence, you just described a few moments ago your exchange with Mr. Wilmoth about your understanding of arriving at the ACC conclusion?
No, what happened, Your Honor, when I, prior counsel, Mr. Deruta, who was privately retained, I sent him a letter with a proposed plea agreement, and in that letter I laid out my view of what I thought his criminal history score was, although I did, consistent with the plea agreement, put in a parenthetical that said, of course, the judge is going to decide this at sentencing. That took place in an August 1st, 2005 letter to Mr. Deruta, again, well after the July 7th deadline. So my error in calculating his criminal history, I would submit, could have played no part in the decision not to file suppression motions on the 7th of July. Does that answer your question, Judge?
Judge Clevert grants in February the motion to withdraw the plea and then recuses himself?
Yes.
Does he explain, is there any record reflect why there's a recusal here?
He does not explain it directly, Judge. I could probably surmise, but it would be probably beyond the record before this court.
I don't know. Was there a decision, had the request been made for a bench trial?
No, Judge. No, Judge. There is a pattern, it seems, in our district where judges sometimes feel after they've taken a plea that's been aborted that they should not then sit on the trial. So I suspect that's probably what it was. The final two issues, unless the court has any questions about the Alamanduras-Torres issue or the Apprendi issue, I will yield the balance of my time.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Wilmoth, your time had expired, but... We've asked a fair number of questions, and you may have a minute.
Record 22, it's the February 1, 2006 transcript of these proceedings. Take a look at page 20. My comments to Judge Clevert, let there be no mistake about it. This motion to withdraw the guilty plea is also premised on ineffective assistance.
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Make no mistake about it, Judge Clevert. This motion to withdraw the guilty plea is based upon ineffective assistance of counsel. That's of record. That argument was made. I'll conclude as follows. The appellant is all in favor of order and the efficient administration of justice. Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals is granting oral argument in virtually all cases that come before it. They set deadlines and time limits and then balance order and efficiency with justice. In this particular case, I think that the chief judge abused his discretion pretrial in favor of order and efficiency, which at trial served no one well, unless it's someone concerned about conviction rather than justice. If constitutional issues, no prejudice to the government, no disruption of the court calendar, and the Sixth Amendment right to effective assistance of counsel is not good cause, there is not good cause in any instance. Thank you.
Thanks, Wilma. Thank you, Mr. Champacher. The case is taken under advisement.